everyone. It's Friday, October the 24th, and you're listening to a very special edition of the Giant Bombcast. We are joined here by Midway's own Ed Boone. Ed, how you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me here.
Of course, also joined by Brad Shoemaker and Jeff, the office's resident Mortal Kombat fiends.
Hello.
Hi.
So, why don't you guys just start inundating Ed with some really hard-hitting questions?
Well, I wanted to talk kind of more about fighting games at large and kind of, you know, the Mortal Kombat series. Like, I've been a huge fan of it for years. I missed high school, large sections of it because I could go play Mortal Kombat 2 instead.
Same here.
Stopped going to a college class, like basically dropped out of college because I wanted to go to Reno to see MK3 for the first time.
Oh my god!
It was like, as I was kind of getting involved in the game industry, it was like, well, I could finish this journalism class or go play an early version of MK3.
So how does it feel to have contributed to the delinquency of America's youth?
Well, you know what? I mean, the fact that it kind of led you to the path to doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Where you're doing video games. I think I consider that a good thing.
Yeah, it's worked out pretty well in the end, I'd say. But those early days, I mean, it really seems like Mortal Kombat and the secrets of Mortal Kombat specifically kind of helped give birth to video game information on the internet. I remember, you know, Alt Games MK, just getting on Usenet, someone posting like, here's a list of unconfirmed fatalities for version 2.1. Like, okay, I'm going to print this out, and instead of going to Spanish class, I'm going to go try this out.
I used to hate that. You know what I mean?
Really?
It took me so long to kind of like just embrace the reality that this internet exists, because we would put a fatality in the game, and then, you know, somebody would find the Sonya fatality, and then in California.
Right.
And then I'd go drive to, you know, an arcade in Chicago and see somebody doing it. And that was kind of like the realization of like, okay, there is a connection line between these two places and information gets out.
Can't stop information.
And then I changed the fatality.
Right, I was going to say, is that exactly what led to revamping all the fatalities?
In retrospect, I don't think I would have done it, but because it infuriated a lot of people. But that was me kind of in denial of what the internet was.
Well, I think you got away with it once, because, you know, it's like I put a lot more quarters into that machine trying to figure out all the new fatalities.
Yeah, but the frustration that what it must have given people, man, I don't know. If I would rewind, I would think of a different approach to it.
I loved the frustration back in like 95 of the people who didn't have access to that stuff. Like the first time that I busted out an animality on like kind of the King of the Roost in my local arcade, he was just like this look, this glower spread over his face, and he was just like, how did you do it? Because like I had like a fact printed out in my back pocket.
I would see like arcades with literally a little box with papers where somebody printed it out. And then you know, then you would walk in and take one and, you know, and do it like that. So it was a special time.
Yeah, definitely. I actually went around to most of the local arcades in my area when Ultimate was out, and I actually entered like the classic Sub-Zero code and all that stuff, and actually drove around to different arcades. I'm going to make sure it's unlocked everywhere, because this has to be done.
You were doing God's work.
Exactly. I was spreading the gospel. That's the way I see
somebody actually disassembled our code for the first, because I think the first game had one Ultimate Combat code. The next one had like three, and the first one was found because somebody disassembled the code and...
Oh man!
And I was like kicking myself, going, "Can't you like, you know, skip every other byte or do something like that?"
Encrypted
and it was
something.
Just so blatant. And then that's when I saw people unlocking them and stuff.
So. Yeah. So it seems like these days, I mean, secrets in games get out immediately. You know, it's like, I mean, typically the strategy guide for a game is available the week before, so it seems like a lot of the moves, a lot of the hidden secrets are already known. You know, by people that are buying these games. I mean, how do you feel about that? It seems like a pretty big change.
Well, I mean, to me, I don't feel like the whole novelty of, you know, I know this fatality and nobody else does. Mm-hmm. What was cool about it was you're in an arcade and people are seeing, people see you do it.
Right.
And how'd you do it? And then, you know, they won't tell you or something like that. And there's something cool about that. But there's no more arcades anymore. Or at least, you know, not as many. So I don't feel like it plays as big of a role in it. You know, maybe on some level you could say online, you know, you could do a fatality.
Sure, sure.
But there's something about the spectacle of it that, you know, I'm doing a fatality. Nobody knows how to do it. I'm the only one. Everybody's going to come ask me how to do it. And so I kind of feel like it's a different time. It's not as big of a role.
So it doesn't necessarily lead you to hide things deeper. Like, there's not going to be some weird time release thing in Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe where all of a sudden Johnny Cage is going to appear in a ghost form or some weird flying over the moon and you got to hit down. And
no, but I mean, it's funny because, you know, we're talking about, you know, like the next game and all that stuff. And that's one of the elements that, you know, we've talked about. Oh, you know, we should really spend an enormous amount of time just putting like ridiculous little things in there. Just so many that there's no way anybody can, you know, find them all.
But yeah. I mean,
I don't know how much.
Just, you know, for one, I think that maybe if I had the ability to knock off three heads instead of one on some of these fatalities.
which was a bug, by the way.
Well, it was a sweet bug.
Yeah, yeah.
If I could use the Baraka's blades to cut up a baby. Actually, you know, I think that'd actually be really funny if you put that in there and then just had it actually fake crash the game and kick you back out to the title screen.
That would be cool. That would be like to fake that the game crashed.
Yeah. How many people do you think would get it at this point, though? I mean, how big is the MK audience and how many of those people are like from the old school versus like who came to it in, like, say, the PS2 era?
That's a really good point. I mean, we have some things in the new game that are kind of like little homages to the old games. Like, you know, Liu Kang has this fatality where, you know, an arcade game drops on.
Right.
And I could see somebody playing it now going, you know, what does that have to do with anything? You know, it's just like this random event. Yeah, and then at some point somebody will say, you know, oh no, you don't get it. In MK3 there was this fatality.
Yeah, or the larger problem of no one knowing what an arcade machine looks like.
What is that? What is this thing?
Yeah.
Are there any other ways that you feel like the kind of shift away from arcades has kind of informed the development of the MK series over the years?
Yeah. You know what? I guess the amount of effort that we spend on just the mysterious stuff that doesn't have to do with gameplay.
Yeah.
You know, all of the, you know, at some point we just got out of control with Babe Ality's friendships and all that stuff. And it was just, we were spending all this time to try to keep grasp of that, you know, that mystery element. Oh, we had 10 in this one. Now let's put 20 in this one. Let's put 30 in this one. And so now it's the focus, I think, is a little bit more on the things that are actually in the gameplay. You know, like, and we have all these kind of like these pro moves, these kind of hidden things. It's, you can know they're in there, but it's going to take some time to learn it. And that's the difference, is we're focusing on things you have to learn as opposed to just memorize. So
right.
That's the main difference.
It's more of a skill-based game.
Yeah,
now, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
How do you feel about Mortal Kombat's place kind of in the pantheon of fighting games these days? It seems like there's still some games coming out of Japan, and there's still kind of an active tournament scene for some of the stuff, the Marvel versus Capcoms and you know, Street Fighter 4 is making a splash in that area too.
Sure.
It doesn't really seem like Mortal Kombat necessarily fits in with...
Yeah, no,
like,
no.
Do you feel that there's just like snobbishness on the part of people that like fighting games these days? Or
I do think that fighting game people are surprisingly, you know, passionate about their game.
Right.
You know, like I used to, you know, I more recently would read like on news groups of like, you know, Tekken fighting, you know, like a forum or something. And you'd see debates on Virtua Fighter versus Tekken, you know, and I never really paid attention a lot to that. And Mortal Kombat to me was always kind of like the more, you know, the more casual, the more accessible, the more doesn't quite take itself as seriously.
Right.
Fighting game. And, you know, we kind of feel like, you know, we're happy with that niche because they're kind of battling it out for this kind of smaller piece.
Right.
And then we're just kind of like, you know, just sitting there happy with our bigger piece.
Just hang out over here and sell copies
and
put DC guys in the game to sell even more copies.
Yeah, and this is Mortal Kombat 8. Yeah, you know, so we're on Mortal Kombat 8, and, you know, we need to, you know, put as much newness as possible. As much as I love, you know, like Tekken and Virtua Fighter and all those games, I am getting a feeling of, okay, yeah, this looks a lot better, and it plays just like the last game. And they added this nuance, but I don't know how much of the public is going to realize that this guy has 4 frames to do this now as opposed to 3.
Right.
You know? And it's so I kind of... To me, it's kind of like, you know, I just want to be a little bit more accessible to the general.
Definitely. I mean, that was definitely my impression coming out of Japan when we were over there for the Tokyo Game Show. Tekken 6 was out. That was the first time I'd seen it and sat down to play it and like, dude, this is Tekken 5 with like a, you know, the guys do more damage when they have very little health left.
And
that sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
More ridiculous characters.
Not enough ridiculous characters, I say. That's
But more ridiculous characters that you don't recognize.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a lot, I think, isn't it? They have like 30 characters. Or
That, Tekken.
36?
You know, Tekken's gotten to a point where they've stopped like eliminating old characters. They're just like, we're adding more. You're gonna get Bayek, and you're gonna get Huarong, and you're gonna like it. And you know, I do like it. Actually.
So you've moved into obviously more of kind of a managerial role on the more recent MKs. I mean, because you've got like dozens of people making these games now, as opposed to back in the day when it was like what, 4 or 6 guys. I mean, like you were doing the coding back then, and now you're kind of overseeing everything. Like, do you ever miss like that kind of grassroots? Like, I don't know if you guys were working out of like a back room or what, but you know, it was just like a handful of guys like on their game making this excellent fighting game. I mean, do you miss those simpler times?
Or? Yeah. You know, we kind of joke around. The guys who've been on the team since the beginning will say, you know, the good old days or something like that.
Sure.
But I mean, unfortunately, that's the reality of the situation. You know, there was 4 guys, and then that became, you know, 6, and that became, you know, I think 8. 10, mm-hmm. 42. You know, it was a jump somewhere. I think when we started on PlayStation 2 games, the team just suddenly doubled. But yeah, I definitely miss that kind of stuff. I actually do get into some of the punches and kicks and some of those like little windows and moments. You know, I'll get into some scripting code, but for the most part, you know, it's you know, the other guys mm-hmm. are doing the main content. There's a couple of guys on our team. One guy was here with us here, Paulo Garcia, and a guy, John Edwards, who worked on Shaolin Monks, who've really taken on a great amount of the mantle of, you know, that whole fighting game, putting in the special moves and stuff like that. So they're awesome.
Cool.
So let's see, Mortal Kombat 8. So what was the last non-fighting game or last non-Mortal Kombat game that you worked on? Seems like you've been trucking on MK now since the early 90s.
Yeah, there've been like a couple of like little diversions. You know, we did an arcade game, like one of the last arcade games that our company did was called The Grid. We did that one, and then we did, I think Arctic Thunder was the last. I didn't work on Arctic Thunder, but that was the last arcade game that we did. And I worked on the Grid, which actually, you know, oddly enough, is like, to me, is like the funnest game I've ever worked on. I mean, including and you know, we have, if you get like 4 or 6 of them in a room, I mean, we've had tournaments at our work that is just you know big pie charts and all this crazy you know percentages, and so that was the last kind of arcade game that I worked on. That was, you know, that was,
and that game was like
code,
and that game was like crazy. You had like a keypad on there to punch in all your secret codes.
It was insane.
I remember that coming out, like, I remember that being a really weird time because The Grid came out, and then like that was right around the time that Midway bought Atari Games, and they had War Final Assault.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And I remember the games being like pretty similar in that they were trying to bring like shooters into the arcades.
Yeah.
And it always seemed like one of those games was destined to come home, like to Dreamcast or something like that. But neither of them did. Was there ever like a home version of The Grid planned that,
you know,
didn't
there was,
happen?
Or? We sent like 3 machines to Microsoft, and you know, I have some friends who work at Microsoft, and they're like, "Oh man, we're going to do this game. It's going to be, this is for the first Xbox."
Right.
And then we had this really weird hardware in the game that was proprietary home hardware, and everybody who started digging into it was like, you know, I can't make any heads or sense of this, you know. So it was kind of, people got really intimidated by the hardware in the game.
And was that the same? Was that like the MK4 hardware also? Or was
the second version. It was called Zeus okay. hardware, and then MK4 was Zeus 1, and and The Grid was Zeus 2. So it was,
because it seems like, even, you know, if we may talk in, you know, some gray market terminology here, MAME doesn't even support The Grid.
Yeah, exactly.
They haven't even figured that stuff out yet. So
and what's interesting is like the polygons are 4-sided. You know, every other piece of hardware, it's 3-sided polygons. So it's 4-sided. And so, you know, just building the models and doing everything is just dramatically different. And for one game, it's hard to get somebody to dig down in there. So
Now, Ed, you had just a ton of experience just in arcades. I mean, you were working on pinball games back in the day.
Yeah.
Do you have any insight as to, like, what would you do to try and, like, bring back arcades, or at least, you know, bring some real interest back into that format of gameplay? Because it definitely seems like something that you miss.
Oh, yeah. You know what? There's like this nostalgia side of me that's, you know, really wants to see it come back. And then there's this kind of business side of you that realizes, you know, it's going to be tough
to gone for a
do
reason.
Something. Yeah. I think to me, you'd have to do something that, you know, links them together, that, you know, makes some kind of a tournament system, some kind of, you know, an ongoing reason to keep coming back,
right.
You know, to play. We tried to hit into that, like, with, you know, high score things,
right.
You know, I won 106 times in a row on MK2, and I want to see my name up there on the top, you know, so like an ongoing thing.
And then there was like, there was WaveNet, right?
That
MK3 trying to network MK3 machines together.
Yeah, like, but then the arcade would have to buy a T1 line and spend, you know, $1,400 a month just on supporting that. So it wasn't economical, but it was, you know, maybe now with DSL lines and cable, they could do something. But yeah, it's just kind of, I think the biggest challenge is the whole financial side of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, just in a practical sense, you're fighting an uphill battle against what's available in the home, you know, in terms of graphics and internet connectivity. I mean, it's you know, $300-$400 initial investment, and then you can play, like, you know, any kind of game. Like, that's amazing looking stuff that, you know, way better than anything you've ever seen in arcades.
That's exactly, you know? I think in the advantage before was, it was, you know, the arcade hardware versus the SNES.
Right.
And so the SNES didn't look as cool as the arcade version. But now, you know, at some point it just passed it up.
It was like, it was that PC version of MK1 and MK2 on the PC. It was like, all right, done.
That's right.
But, I mean, there's still something about the arcade experience that, I mean, there's a lot that you can replicate at home as far as the quality of the graphics and, you know, the online stuff. But I feel like the thing that the arcade will always have that you're never going to capture at home is that having the other people there.
Oh, the social interaction.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
The communal aspect. Yeah.
That physical, that meat space kind of aspect to it.
You're right. And I think that whatever magic would have to, you know, kind of rekindle that would have to be playing up on that.
Right.
Playing up on the fact that, you know, you don't ever have 100 people in your house, but, you know, there have been situations with an arcade where there's 100 people around, and how do you get them all engaged in this one one thing.
So it seems like Midway has just this huge back catalog of arcade games, and these days it seems like the roster of games that are kind of continuing that legacy, it's kind of down to MK and I guess Blitz with the arcade roots. Are there other older Midway games that you see as coming as you know, that you would like to see come back?
You know, I'd love to see an NBA Jam type of a game, you know, a little bit more kind of crazy, over the top, in terms of that experience. It was like a great, you know, four people in front of a game, and you know, two on two, they had a great exchange between them. You know, I get to this day, I have people, like, you know, sending me like a design thing for, like, you know, the grid on Xbox Live, you know, or something like that.
Right.
And you know, then the inevitable, you know, thing about the hardware comes up. but you know, I'd love to see, you know, and to me, what comes to mind is NBA Jam. You know, maybe even like a Xbox Live Smash TV, you know,
like a sequel.
Some kind
like
of sequel to that, or you know, so some of those.
Seems classics. Like every time I see Mark Turmel at anything, I'm like, so Smash TV sequel?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
I know Mark wants to see it. He's mentioned that a few times.
Yeah, me. Yeah. It seems, I mean, would that be something that would ever interest you just as a developer? I mean, it seems like you're kind of on this track to keep making, you know, bigger games with bigger teams, but does the downloadable space ever appeal to you as kind of like scratching that small team itch?
Yeah, I think that would be awesome, and especially also just the appeal of doing something that, you know, lasts 8 months as opposed to, you know, 2.5 years or something like that. You know, the turnaround, it's an amazing amount of work to put these and to be able to have, you know, iterate quicker is appealing to me.
Now that you're up to speed on kind of Unreal Engine and the things that you've been doing for DC Universe, do you see the turnaround for the next game being faster, or have you just kind of filled your head with so many ideas of things that you want to do next time around that it'll probably take just as long to do all that cool stuff?
You know, even if we could spend something in a year, I don't think I'd want to. You know, I personally have this, have like, you know, I don't want to do a Mortal Kombat game every year. I think at some point, you know, it just becomes, you know, you just need it to be a break out of the consciousness of people. You know, we did Deception, Shaolin Monks, and Armageddon year, you know, together. And even though Shaolin Monks was a like more of an action adventure game, I felt we saturated it. You know, I felt that, you know, we hit it too often. And so I would want to, you know, either spend the time to make it, you know, that much better, or just kind of give people a breather, you know.
Cool. It seems like downloadable content might be a way to kind of extend the life of the current game to kind of keep people excited without releasing a new game. Has that been something that you're
totally
taking a look
at? We built this game into a downloadable content component into this game, and so we're ready. You know, obviously everything is based on how it sells and stuff like that. It's looking very positive now. So we would we'd love to have some kind of a voting online poll to who's you want Robin or do you want
Kung Lao?
Kung Lao, maybe.
That's right.
Forgot about Striker.
Everyone always forgets about.
So for the future of MK, I know better than to ask any like hard and fast questions here. But do you see like the DC universe, like the MK versus DC, like spinning off into its own side series, or is this something that you're thinking about exploring with other properties going forward? Like what's kind of swirling around in your head right now?
We kind of think of like a few scenarios. One is I think that there'd be a a novelty to Mortal Kombat going back to the M-rated game. It's kind of like a return to its roots type of thing. And I think it would have been 4 years between the last M-rated Mortal Kombat game. That'd be a cool one. And this is more of a pipe dream. I'd still love to see a Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat just for the nostalgic 1992, era, stuff like that.
Well, that almost kind of happened, didn't
it? Yeah, it always kind of boils down to, well, who's going to make it? For some reason, the notion of Capcom allowing, us to put Ryu throwing a fireball, for some reason, I can't see that, happening. Well, it'd be awesome.
On a mechanical level, it's two pretty different fighting systems.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Which one do you lean toward? Like, which elements do you take from both?
You know what would be the coolest version, I think, is if we developed a version that had both.
Yeah.
And somehow you got them together.
But
so
like, you choose
the
fighting system, the character.
Pick your
so there's
character,
like a Street Fighter version of Liu Kang.
Yeah. Right. Or if you just had, Ryu played like Ryu and Liu Kang played like Liu Kang, and how do they
see
mix
if they
together?
Work? Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, when Capcom worked with SNK, SNK did their game and Capcom did theirs, and they kind of each had their own kind of style, whether it was like, running or backdashing or something like that. So, maybe Midway makes the MK versus Street Fighter, and then Capcom makes Street Fighter versus MK. And they both come out, within 8 months of each other or something like that. Two totally different games.
That would be cool.
Capcom, make it happen. Pick up the phone.
They're riding high right now.
Yeah.
So why not?
They've got their IC card business over in Japan and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, well, that I was going to say earlier, that's kind of what... Well, I don't want to say that's the only thing that's keeping arcades going over there, but like that does tie into the communal aspect where you've got this persistent ranking and character that you're building up, and that's a reason to go back and like show off your stats and your
totally.
Your skill.
Yeah, they're
and
all
your,
doing
your
that.
History.
It's like Tekken, Virtua Fighter, and Street Fighter.
Yeah,
and
I haven't been to Japan in, 8 years or something like that. So I really would like to take a trip down there and see, just because all this stuff has happened, since I've been there.
Right.
So I haven't, I'd love to kind of see how that plays into the.
Yeah, there's definitely still a thriving competitive scene for fighting games there.
Yeah.
So, it's.
It's kind of scary, almost.
It's just
the smoke-filled arcade of all these people just sitting at their individual kiosks playing
Street Fighter. That freaked me out when I saw people like not standing next to each other, like on the other side with another monitor. I was kind of like, and so. Kind of quiet and not.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like this real honorific aspect to it. It's like very solemn in a way. Yeah.
But think of how many fights that avoided over
the
years.
Exactly.
Totally. Standing next to someone who just like double flawless you and
with low punches.
Exactly. Like and then did the Babality. You're like, I'm just going to take you out back and finish this my own way.
Yeah. Well, I think we are just about out of time. So unless you guys have any final questions for Ed here.
MK2 ever come to Xbox Live Arcade? PS3 got it. What's up with that?
You know what's really weird? It's just the other day somebody asked me that, and in my head I thought that it was there. I've lost track.
I can definitely attest that it's not.
I've lost track. It's like it's been released on DS.
Right.
Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, and I paused and I was like, wow, I wonder if there's something that we could do, whether it's enhancing something or adding MK1 characters or something like that, because I'm actually surprised that it's not up there.
Put MK Trilogy back out. That hasn't been out since N64 and
PS1. There you go.
Raiden running with the walk animation really fast. I mean, come on.
Wow, you remember all the details. That was crazy.
Well, Ed, thanks for coming by. Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. So when's it coming out and what's it coming out on?
It's coming out November 16th for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
And that's going to do it for us. We will be back on our regularly scheduled podcast this coming Tuesday.